So just to know, any of you have you performed any deity worship in that in the past, or
Very little.
very little?
Yeah.
And where was that?
London,
In
Soho.
London. Do you stay in Soho?
I used to. I live outside. I'm married.
Oh, I see.
Live
So
in the area.
you've done some worship.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, and yourself?
Did some also worship, but in temple, also Ujjayi for some few months.
Oh, right, in Russia.
Latvia.
In Latvia. Oh, okay.
In Riga. But no, I don't remember anything very much.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yourself, Maliki?
I came under my husband because he wants me to get a better idea for deity worship in general. I never was in the temple, neither did I do in temple. But my condition is that I have to stay home and actually have a temple at home, so he wants me to, you
No, I
know.
understand what's going on there. Okay, very nice. Yeah. And yourself? You have done much worship or anything?
Doing a Punjabi worship for 3 years.
In which place?
Outside London as
Oh, okay.
Not very long.
Okay, yeah, no, I saw you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you did a course there recently.
That was funny, we were in London. Then I just the day before. Yes, come inside. Yeah, here. Just the day before, I forget who had told, either Sachinandan Maharaj or someone had told me the story about how in the Gaudiya Mathas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the Yogpeeth, then they had one girl from outside had come to. She used to wash pots for the deities' pots. And then how do you say? And then after some time, just by association, the pujari and that girl who'd washed the pots, they became attracted to each other. And in the Gaudiya Math, then grihasthas don't live in the temples, because a math means only brahmacharis sannyasis. If it's a temple, then you can have grihasthas. Like you find most places where the deities are, the centers of temples. They're not mutts. But the Gaudiya Math and then some are like the Shankara Math. Whenever it says mutt, it means only sannyasis brahmacharis stay. So they decided to get married, so the two of them just ran off, you know, went back to its village. And they got married there. And then after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur found out about it, he called him, you know, and told him that, you know, now you're married, this and that, so you should continue, you know, performing your devotional activities and all that. So then I made the point in the class that we should be careful that, you know, that ladies are washing the pots, that the boys and girls don't get any ideas like that. And I said something, and it was kind of everybody laughed. And I was wondering, you know, what was, you know, why. And then after, you know, some time, it was near kind of like the end of the class. Then one of the girls from the audience got up and walked towards the pujari room. And I said, well, she's going to go wash pots? Like that. I was just kind of joking. And then everybody cracked up even more. And then afterwards I found out that the pujari and this girl were going to be getting married. And the pujari didn't even come out of the deity room. There's some back door he left through that way, and then the girl stayed inside the whole time until the class was over, and they thought I was specifically talking about them. I didn't even know about all that. I was just talking about, you know, just in general. But it was kind of funny how it worked out. Like, that was when I was there. And okay, so on the deity worship, see, Janani also will be talking about practical. The main practical things. We're going to be talking just basically about the philosophy of the whole process. Maybe you can sit on this side. So then, see, if we, Paul, in the Vedic knowledge, you have 14 books of knowledge. And one of those books is transcendental, which is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That is called transcendental knowledge, or paravidya. So for us, that means the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion. These are our central books of transcendental knowledge. Then the other 13 books are categories of knowledge. Then they deal with basically how to engage the material nature in the Lord's service. Like that. So they're called aparavidya. Means they're not transcendental knowledge, but they're dovetailed knowledge. So then, in engaging these things in the Lord's service, yeah. So now, if that knowledge is used in the service of the Lord, then everything becomes, it also takes on the transcendental quality, like iron and fire. This is an important element to understand, because otherwise what happens is that if we take up the various branches of knowledge, you know, Vedic or non-Vedic, but we don't use them in the Lord's service, then they become avidya, which means ignorance. So this is a little bewildering, because for us, then, knowledge means, you know, anything that we can assimilate with the intelligence. And ignorance means, you know, generally that which means we don't know what's going on. It means we don't understand what's happening. So the Vedic has the same understanding, but on a higher level. So dovetailed knowledge means that we have the understanding, and best is the realization, how it is engaged in the Lord's service. And ignorance means not knowing how to engage something in the Lord's service. So it's a very, you know, straightforward definition. But so even though you may have to go to university to learn it, if you don't know how to engage it in Krishna's service or see the connection between the Lord and that knowledge, then it's ignorance. Very, very simple, like that. So in other words, real knowledge is transcendental. And ignorance means not knowing what is transcendental. That's the simple definition. So the process of ritual, how to perform rituals by which one can purify the conditioned nature and elevate it to the platform of devotional service, that is called kalpa. So the Pancharatra, the rules that fall within that body of knowledge called kalpa. But technically, the Pancharatra is also the rituals that are very distinctly and directly connected with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Very directly connected. There's no, you don't have anything in the Pancharatra that doesn't refer to higher knowledge, you know, the transcendental knowledge. It doesn't just give you some aspect of knowledge, you know, of ritual, without showing how it relates to the Supreme Lord, like that. So therefore, it's very special. Well, the big bodies of knowledge, it will give in a hidden way, not in a direct way. Just like we see that you'll perform a particular sacrifice, like we're talking about, like you see in the Skanda Puran, which is a Purana meant for those in the mode of ignorance. And there it will be describing about worshipping the demigods. So it will appear that it's encouraging worship of the demigods, you know, especially worship of Lord Shiva. But in there will be a note that one shloka will say that unless you can worship all 33 million, then it's an offense. But most people don't notice that one. They just become caught up in the process of worshiping, why one should worship, and they are giving everything and all this and that, so that should be recognized. But generally most people miss the verse that says that unless you can worship all 33 million, then it's an offense. So, and it's impossible. How you worship all 33 million? Because if you worship one, why him? You've worshipped, you know, Surya, but why not Varun? Right? It means without the sun, okay, we could say we don't live. But you know, ourselves and most everything that we deal with is mostly made out of water. And then it's Vayu, why, you know, breathing air. And then Trigunamayi is running everything, but she's running it through all the different demigods. So you're blinking your eyes, so you'll be able to look because of the Ashwini Kumaras, and, you know, the heart is working because of this demigod and that demigod. It means the whole body, in other words, the whole body is like a microcosmos. And in that, the influence of all 33 million demigods is present. They take care of everything. Like that. So if we're respecting one, then why not the others? You know, it's like they did something wrong. So like this, then if someone's really intelligent, then they can understand, I can't do that. How you'll do that? Right? Install each deity to worship them like that is going to be very, very difficult. And they won't give it system for worshiping all of them at once. The system they give is how you worship one at a time. And then you have to apply that system on 33 million. So if you look at it, it's actually not possible. It's actually not possible to worship the demigods properly. So you can only worship all the demigods. Someone who's really intelligent says, okay, I have to worship them all, and I have limited time, right? You know, within this lifetime, ideally one should finish a particular, you know, ritual. So therefore, by worshiping the Supreme Lord, all the demigods, all the limbs of the Virapurush, the universal form, therefore by worshiping him, the Supreme Lord, then you've worshiped everyone. And everyone's satisfied. So that is the Pancharatra deals with that form of worship. Right? In the Upasana, the Karmakanda, which is the purpose of elevation to the heavenly planets. You have the Jnanakanda, which is for elevation to the platform of Brahman. And then you have the Upasanakanda, which the lower end is for worshipping the demigods. But then the upper end is for worshipping the Supreme Lord. It means Upasanakanda, they will worship five main different forms. The sun. Let's see, who do they start with? Maya, I think, is the first, lowest level. Anamoy. Maya is the lowest level, where you're worshipping material energy, and you're dealing with the senses. So all knowledge that deals with the senses is on that platform, like that. So even modern science and anything that we do where we're using the senses for understanding knowledge or perceiving knowledge, that is on that level. The first level, the lowest level. Then the next level up is then worship the sun, which means we worship life. Nanamoy. It's that, you know, just life in general. We're very impressed with life. You know, we got into nature and life itself is there. Then same category, but more specific, is then worship of Ganesh. Ganapati. Ganas means the people, a large group. Then we worship people as God, you know, like Eric Clapton is God, or, you know, someone else is God, like this. But we worship a certain particular, my child is God, you know, that some particular personality, then we worship them. So then the next level is worship of Shiva. In worship of Shiva, then we understand basically the aspect of the element of Brahman, like that. It means the material nature, and then there's the Brahman. And then above that, then is worship of Vishnu in the mode of goodness. It is the impersonalists think that the Lord has appeared, and he's manifesting in the mode of goodness. So all these five are still material. But then the Pancharatra then takes Upasana to the point of actual worship, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. So then, and doing that, it takes the various scriptures and that, and establishes nicely the worship of the Lord. So the origin of Pancharatra then is, goes back to before the creation, after Brahma appeared, and he was instructed by Lord Vishnu. Then, at that time, also the Madhu and Kaitava demons manifest from the back of the Lord's body. So they're very special demons, not ordinary demons. And then these demons, they stole the knowledge that Brahma had. Brahma's knowledge, they stole it. They just went into his mind and stole the Vedas. You know? So very unique thieves, right? You know, it's like not anybody can do it, but because they're coming from the Lord, then they're able to do this. So then, after they were stolen, Brahma went to Vishnu and said, "You please again teach me this knowledge of the Veda. But before you teach me all that knowledge, you just teach me the essence first. Because if I may die before I've heard the whole Veda, at least I'll know what the essence is. And after teaching the essence, then you can teach the whole Veda." So then over 5 nights, then Krishna spoke to Lord Brahma, this knowledge. So it's, therefore it's called Pancharatra, 5 nights, like that. So the essence of the Vedas is how to worship the Supreme Lord. Right? Means you have, in our philosophy, you have 3 aspects, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Pratyojana. Sambandha means that we understand our relationship, who we are, who the Lord is, and that relationship there. So then, then once we understand that, then the next step is then we should worship the Lord. So once one's actually understood the knowledge, then one will do some practical work. That practical knowledge then will be gained. Then the goal of that is pure love of God. Right? So Sambandha, the essence we see of knowledge is its practical application. And this is also upheld in the Bhagavad Gita. Because in the Gita, then Krishna, 15, 1 through 8, then he describes knowledge. He's not describing, you know, this particular branch or that particular branch or some intellectual aspect. What he's describing is humility, respect of authority, control of the senses. So this means we started with some knowledge, and then there is the application of that knowledge. That's how we're going to, just like we understand that there's the Supreme Lord. We're not supreme. We're servant of the Lord. Right? So we understand we're servant of the Lord, then naturally what does that create? Humility. It creates respect of authority. It means we respect the supreme authority of the Lord. And we respect the the authority of the Supreme Lord. And we see that the Lord is the actual enjoyer, so that creates control of the senses, right? We therefore, because He is the Lord, we are the servant, then that means we will serve. Right? Then, because our interest is in spiritual activities, therefore we don't like to be with the main mass of people and all these different things. So all these 20 qualities that are listed there, then that all becomes because of the theoretical knowledge. But it actually becomes knowledge when we're able to apply it in our life. That's when it actually becomes practical. Come and sit. You're comfortable there? Catch a little sun there or something. Sit on the rug, otherwise the floor is cold. So, so then, how do you say? and Krishnas. Put some more back. So then, okay. Yes. So then he spoke this sense of the philosophy or the practical application means the Veda is for always remembering Krishna, never forgetting. So once one remembers and doesn't forget, what one will do, one will serve. So the essence of the Abhideva, that was given by Krishna to Lord Brahma in the form of the Pancharatra. So in that it describes how to worship the Lord in the deity form, the Archimurti. So now, this is very important for us because once they ask, okay, so it's dealing with the transcendental Lord and the transcendental process. So why is it also, why will it take category of the aparavidya, means of the material knowledge that is engaged in service. This is not because the Lord is material or the rituals of worship are material. The process is material. It's because our conditioned nature is material. Because it's only because of our conditioned nature we need to follow the Pancharatra. Krishna's first recommendation is just to surrender to him. It's the first recommendation. Then if you can't do that, then follow the process of sadhana bhakti. So the sadhana is described in the Pancharatra. How to perform worship the Lord means by chanting, hearing, remembering, all these different aspects. So in the spiritual realm, the different living entities are performing these transcendental activities spontaneously. They have natural affection for Krishna, natural love for Krishna. So they always chant the Lord's names, they always hear about him, always see him, always remember him, always make offerings to him, always worship him in so many different ways. So then, but in the material world, we don't have that love. It's not spontaneous. It just doesn't exist. So that is invoked by following a system in which body, mind, senses, everything can be purified by activities, by the prescribed duties. Krishna mentions in the Gita, perform the prescribed duties for him without desiring for result. So we have two main different levels of prescribed duties. One is our sadhana and the worship of the deity or the Pancharatra, and the second is the codes of dharma or the Vedic, the culture, you know, that deal with the ashrams and varnas. So now, the conditioned nature then requires that we cannot see the transcendent Lord. So he comes very, very mercifully in the form of Archimurti, in the form of the deity. Because this material nature is him. But we impose upon it our desires. So basically that's why we have this contradictory statement that the world exists, but it doesn't exist. Right? It exists means it's actually the material nature is there. But it doesn't exist because what we are seeing is according to our desire. Right? We put something in front of us, then we immediately look at that and decide whether it's something we want or something we don't want. Because that's what the mind does. There's not a third choice. Like that. Is it Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls it the sensuous gaze of inspection. Like that. The materialist, whatever's there, he always looks at everything and immediately decides is something I want or not in relation to the senses. So the Pancharatra gives us how to take those same senses and how to engage them so that we can look at everything. But now see it in relationship to the Lord. Is it useful in service to the Lord or not? Right? Before we see it in relation to ourselves, is it useful to us or not? But now we see it in relationship to the Lord. Is this item useful? It's something that can be offered. Like this particular flower, does Krishna like this flower? Yes. So is it offerable? the flower is category of flower is nice, but is it offerable? Like is it you know, in a good condition? If it's before it's opened or it's already gone dry, like this. So we check and we see if it's clean, you know, hasn't fallen on the ground, or our hands are clean when we pick it, or the pot we put it into is clean. Like this, then we deal with it, and this way we use the mind and the intelligence and the senses in the Lord's service, which now through the medium of the Pancharatra, instead of just through the medium of what is good for our senses. So like that, then we deal. So it gives us a way to engage the senses. So that aspect, it's called aparavidya. But because it's in relationship to the Lord, and it directly connects everything with the philosophy, so therefore it's also counted as transcendental. Like we see in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, when Krishna describes to Uddhava the process of deity worship. In fact, it is explained there very nicely. So it is transcendental in this way. Okay. So then, is there any questions on this? Or this connection between the Pancharatra fits into the... In philosophy, it's part of Abhideya. It's the ritual side of what the Nectar of Devotion explains. Yes. So between the teachings of Rupa and Sanatan, then the whole Abhideya Tattva is delineated. The Bhagavatam explains that one should worship the Lord. Then Rupa Goswami explains the glories of devotional service, and what are the elements of devotional service, the principles of devotional service. And he's taken that from Sanatana Goswami's work, Hari Bhakti Vilas. So the Hari Bhakti Vilas describes the ritual side of devotional activities, and the Nectar of Devotion describes the, you know, what are the essential points and their connection in the philosophy and why they should be done. And the Hari Bhakti Vilas then gives us the ritual itself and how to perform that properly. So then between these two transcendental brothers, the Rupa and Sanatan, then we get the whole direction on how to perform devotional activities. So, yeah. Then we see here the perfect blend between the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik. The Bhagavat is used to chant Hare Krishna. The Pancharatrik is you use beads. I have 108, you know, beads to them. You have a mala of beads that have 108 beads. They go from big to small, shaped like a snake. You know, they should be, you know, nice so you can chant on them. You have a head bead. It's called Meru. Or for us, we call it the Krishna bead. So that's Krishna and the 108 beads, the gopis. And then we chant on those, one mantra, one bead. You know, like this. So all these different things come from the Pancharatra. And by following that, then our chanting goes nicely. Someone on the platform in the Bhagavat Marg, he doesn't need any of that. He will chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day anyway. Whether he has beads, no beads, or whatever. Like Gorky Shortest Bhagavad Maharaj. I think people used to like and come and take his beads because they figured beads of Mahabhagavat is chanted on. But after stealing a few sets of his beads, he decided, okay. You know, because people would give, he'd get very nice beads. So besides that, Mahabhagavat has chanted on them, then more important is their far out beads. Right? You know, the nice looking beads. You know, hand carved tulsi and all this kind of thing. So then he said, okay. So he took some old dry banana leaves. And down the center of the banana leaf, you have kind of like a stalk, and it's very sturdy, flexible. Like, you know, like, it's very flexible, but it's very sturdy. So he took those, and he just took that long strip and tied knots in it, and then tied many together until he had a model of 108. And he chanted on that. So it may not be exactly according to the, you know, Hari Bhakti Vilas, but it got the work done. And after that, no one stole his beads. No one thought, here is banana leaf mala that some Mahabhagavata has chanted on. Let me get that for my fortune. No, it's now it's not some fancy tulsi bead. No one was interested. So we, this is the connection there. Then also we see that in performance of prescribed duties, then we have the varnashram aspect, but then we also have the deity worship aspect, because these are also prescribed duties. These are prescribed duties for someone who's following sadhana. That one must chant, one must, you know, rise early in the morning, one must do all these different activities. So these are also duties that are prescribed, and they also must be done without attachment. Kapila Muni describes to his mother that devotional service in the mode of passion is that service by which we worship the deity for material desire, for material benefit. So he recommends one avoid that. So whether it is in the performance of the Vedic rites or the performance of the Pancharatrik, both sets of prescribed duties, one must not do so with desire for material results. So that is there. So we see that there's a very nice connection between the whole system. The Bhagavat then is supported by the rules of the Pancharatra that guides our sadhana, and is also that is supported by the rules of the Varnashram that keep us engaged. If we can worship the deity all day, very nice. But if not, then other activities will keep us busy. In other words, the Vaishnava is a realized Brahman. Right? So the Bhagavat Marg means someone who is a realized Brahman, topmost Brahman. That is for him. Just like Haridas Thakur, when the Bodhipatra was being given. Haridas Thakur was performing the Shraddha rites, and then afterwards the Bhojapatra, means the special offering plate, then is given to whoever is the most qualified Brahmin in the assembly. So many Brahmins were present at the time, because Dvaitacharya is the leader of the Brahmins in Shantipur. He's very famous. And he was performing this, and so everyone thought that'll be one. It's very to be respected in such a community is very special. So then he was looking at everyone, and everyone's thinking that they are the special person. Someone is very expert in this branch of knowledge, or another one in that, or one has done more sacrifices, or more worship, or one is older, or one has so many disciples, or whatever. Each one has some reason that they are the special one. They are all thinking. So then, but at the end we see that Advaitacharya gave the Bhojapatra to Haridas Thakur, to the shock of all the pundits present. That was because he is the realized Brahman. The other ones are performing brahminical activities, don't actually know why they're doing it. They don't know it's for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. But he knows that the perfection of life is doing everything for the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he was offered the Bhojapatra. So that is the Vaishnava. That is the platform of the Bhagavat. So then, if one cannot just act on that platform of the realized Brahman, then one acts on the platform of sadhana, which is the platform of Brahman. The Brahman who knows that the Supreme Lord has to be worshipped. Right? Bhagavat means you have realized the Lord. To some degree. Whether fully or not. It means you've realized the Lord, but whether you've come to the platform of prema, that's another step. But it's within that realization is in bud form. Prema is in its bud form in Bhava. So that aspect is there, the Mahabhagavat, the Bhagavat Marg. So then, if we come to the next platform, then we follow sadhana. So then sadhana is for the Brahman who knows the Supreme Lord, right? But has not necessarily realized. So then that aspect is there. Now if we find our conditioned nature, we're not satisfied with this platform either, then we introduce the other aspects of varnashram. Right? So we have to introduce the other varnas. Ashrams Brahman follows all four. So when you introduce sadhana, we automatically introduce brahmacharya grahastha vanaprasthanyas. But occupation is brahminical. Worship of the deity, teaching, preaching, all these different aspects. So therefore, the combination between the pancharatra and the preaching of the Bhagavat, of the holy name. But if that doesn't fully take care of our needs, our conditioned nature, then we introduce the other three varnas, right? And then the whole Vedic system becomes manifest. Because if it's only brahminical, it's all very simple. All in the realm of sadhana, it all fits in all the activities. It's basically just everyone's chanting, everyone's worshipping the deity, hearing Bhagavatam. And that is the occupation. Worship of the deity, preaching, teaching, that's all there is. That is the occupation. And it's also the method of upliftment. Right? Then you're either brahmachari or doing those things, or you're married doing those things, retired from marriage, or sannyas. So it's very simple describing the dharma of those situated on the pancharatric path is very simple and straightforward. But now if you want to introduce broader than that, then you need big management, big economic development, and a lot of people to do a lot of things, right? Brahmins will live in little grass houses. It doesn't take much to put them together. They don't need management because on their own they manage themselves. They're self, how you sell, self-disciplined. The scripture manages them. Or senior Brahmins, you know, the direction that you're following nicely or not following nicely. So it doesn't take big organization. But if we went beyond that in economic development, then the Vedic system has to be introduced. Because then you need kings, you need Vaishyas to generate all the money, you need Shudras to perform all the different art forms and everything like that are necessary to hold the whole society together. Okay. So then the Vedic culture comes in. But that still the sadhana remains. Because as devotees, we're still in the consciousness of Brahmins. The values of a Brahmin, the goals of a Brahmin, though we may not be satisfied just performing the brahminical occupational duties. Then we introduce the Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra occupational duties into the system. And instead of just doing deity worship all day, you do in the morning and evening, you know, the sadhana, and during the day you do other occupational duties. Like that. So then the system becomes complete. So it naturally unfolds. We see that Prabhupada has already introduced all of this. He came with the idea of just you know, the sadhana. And then with time he saw the importance of the varnashram. So then he introduced all these things. So it naturally unfolds. We're all connected to each other very nicely. Okay, is that clear? Any questions on this? I'm not boring everyone. So now in the Pancharatra itself, it deals with four main different areas. You have jnana, like every other branch of Vedic knowledge. We always start off with the jnana section. The jnana section means you start with the Supreme Lord, and then you come down into the creation, Krishna's creation. You come down to the secondary creation of Brahma, and then you get to the particular topic involved. Right? Because every Vedic topic you bring down like that. You start with the Lord, then he glances on Pratan. Then you injects the living entities. You get Mahat Tattva. Then from there, then the modes of nature that, you know, take up because of time element. And then all the elements manifest, all the senses, the sense objects, the tan mantras, means the hearing, taste, sound, smell, touch. All these manifest, the material desire, all these different things come up because of the modes. Then Brahma is created, and then his creation. Then he puts together all the different planets and this and that. And he'll describe it enough to get to where you take off from for the topic. Right? So here we'll come down to the human society, the process of worship, and the Archimurti. Now Ayurveda will come down to the human beings, and then the herbs, right? And then how to use those herbs to, how you say, take care of the human beings. That means all these different things come down. When you get to the earth element, creation, then from earth comes herbs, right? Then from the herbs comes rice, and from rice comes people, right? So then the whole process is then how to use those herbs and elements of the earth in maintaining the health of the people and the animals. So now, so one knows how the Ayurveda connects back to the Supreme Lord, right? The Dharma Shastra is the same. And comes down through all that, and then it gets down to human beings. Then, from human beings, then what is right and wrong is created, and the whole culture. So then, the Dharma Shastras then come into being. Because this is the right behavior, this is the wrong behavior. So then, in the Pancharatra, the same. Comes down, starts with Mahanarayan, comes down to Narayan, and then the Purusha avatars, and then the then we have the Archimurti, you know, how he manifests in the eight different forms. And then from there we have our worship. So like that, it's the connection is just, that's all described in Jnana. The Jnana section specifically gives how all these different aspects are there. Right? Like you see when Sanatana Goswami, the knowledge is described for him. Then Chaitanya starts by the aspect of that there's so many living entities in the universe. Out of those, there's only a few that are human. Right? Yeah. Same knowledge is given in the fifth canto. Then out of those few that are human, only a few of them are actually civilized. Civilized meaning that follows Vedic culture. Then of those who are civilized, only a few are interested in you know, higher values of life, liberation. Then out of those who are interested in liberation, only a few actually endeavor for it. And of those few who endeavor for it, only a few actually get it. And out of, you know, thousands of those few, only one may take up devotional service. So in this way, he starts. So the same aspect is there. Same element, same process is there. You understand the knowledge where everything fits in, and you can deal with the specifics of the item. Because the problem with the modern knowledge is so much of the time we separate the knowledge from its other aspects, and it gives a difficult result because of this. One, it's not very effective. Just like modern medicine, it's become, you know, quite advanced. They can do many things with it. But because they work on the principle that, okay, I have a plant, in this plant there's 20 different elements in the bark or something. Now, of the 20 elements, only one that does the work that I want it to. Like, let's say you take from malaria, you have the quinine tree. So you take the bark of the quinine tree and grind it into a powder, like the whole bark. And give that for malaria prevention or malaria, that's called Mahasudarshan Churna. That's an Ayurvedic medicine. Then you take that quinine bark, and then you figure out that it's the element quinine that is doing the work. You extract that from the bark and give it. Then it also gets rid of the malaria, but now it has with side effects. The Ayurvedic one gets rid of the malaria without the side effects. Because that element of quinine is balanced by all the other elements in the bark, and the body then can assimilate properly. Otherwise, it does the work without all the other things. It becomes a little difficult, just like we have a meal. Okay, now we may look at the meal and okay, there's so much fiber that is not very digestible, and then there's so much water that's there, you know, and all that. And then, you know, basically what we'll do is we'll just extract out of it a few vitamins, minerals, and the ghee. Okay, so now if we just take ghee and take a few, put a few minerals into that and drink that, what will happen to our system? Will it go very nicely? No. So the ghee and all these other things, then they are assimilated by the body if it has all the roughage of all the rice and the vegetables and all these different things that are there. So then that is the difference between the Vedic approach to knowledge and the modern. Modern is you take a branch of knowledge and it can be completely exclusive on its own. It has nothing to do with anything else. Like some of the members of the BI were telling that it's a very interesting phenomenon in the scientific world that because of the specialization, no one field knows what the other field is doing. So what's going on in physics, then chemistry has no idea. You know, like that. They don't. So let us say there's a theory that the physicists throw out today. They've decided this is useless, has no meaning. Tomorrow, the chemists will pick it up that this is the latest greatest theory and they'll try to apply it in their discipline. Then after some years, they may also throw it out. So there's no coordination. It's not seen as a whole complete. And they're not worried about that because they're not dealing with the complete whole. When you're dealing with God, then you're dealing with the complete whole. So when God is there, being the whole, you want to be able to see where this particular branch of knowledge is in relationship to the whole. You know, where does it fit? What does it connect to? So the first section must be jnana, or knowledge. Then the rituals then are broken up. Then after that, then there is the personal practices of the devotee. And then after that, then we get into the two different main aspects of application, which are called nitya and naimittik. So nitya means daily. Those things that are done daily, like worship of the deity, his morning bath, waking him, putting to rest, offering boga, offering artiks, dressing, all these things, this is nitya seva. It goes on every day. And in the nitya seva, by understanding that, you understand how the rituals work. That's the basis of all the rituals. So if you understand the nitya, then you can understand naimittik, which means occasional. Occasional things like Ekadasi or Janmashtami. You only do Janmashtami once a year. You don't do it every day. You know, so appearance days, disappearance days, installation of the deity, you know, your different samskar, all these different things, these are naimittik. But the ritual is the same. How you bathe the deity on a regular day and how you bathe the deity on a festival day will be the same. Just the festival may be more elaborate, more items. But it still gets poured on its head. It's not that, you pour it on the feet. It goes from the head down to the feet. But on the festival day, you pour it on the feet and miraculously it'll go up to the head. No, it stays the same. Like that. All it says is becomes more elaborate. It's what you do on, so in one naimittik kriya, the abhishek may be a big thing. In another, it may be the dressing will be special. Or it may be special yajnas, or it may be special, offering, boga offering, or any combination of that. So this makes for the naimittik. So those are the different elements that are described in the Pancharatra. Okay, is that clear on this? Means just these four aspects. Okay. So specifically in deity worship, we're dealing with one. We're dealing with daily. One understands that, then the occasional activities. then are equally understood. No questions on that? Okay. So now it's 12. Should we continue or should we stop here? Or might be good to stop, let this soak in, and then tomorrow we'll begin with the 16 items. Get the overview of what is the 16 items, how they work, how they relate to each other. Because you know, once that's understood, then when Jnanivas very sweetly and wonderfully describes the 64 items, then it will become realized knowledge. Otherwise, we will give you some yapan, like that Krishna recommends that it be taken to the platform of realization. So that you'll have to go to Jnanivas Guru for. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.